This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Coming up to 48 minutes past 7 a.m., it's Thursday, August 30th, the eve of Hari Kebangsaan 2018, the first Merdeka Day in this new Malaysia Baharu. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han, with me Joyce Goh and Melissa Idris. We're just about to dive into the top business stories of the day, but before that, I give you a heads up. After the 8 a.m. news bulletin, we'll have the Breakfast Grill, and today you don't want to miss this one, because, well, I know you never miss any of our Breakfast Grills, but today in particular, you want to stay in your cars and listen to this, because we will have Dato Sri Dr. Wan Aziza, Dr. Wan Ismail, Deputy Prime Minister, and Melissa, you'll be speaking to her.
That's right. Well, it was an interview that was recorded earlier, and I just want to say, if you have to leave your car at any point in time in the Breakfast Grill, you can still listen to the Breakfast Grill on the BFM app, which you can download off where you get normally get your apps at the Apple App Store.
Shameless plug there. Now on to the top business news of the day. Some breaking news here. You've got Lube Holdings of T Live and La Kafa International of Cha Time. They have agreed to withdraw all court and arbitral proceedings against each other. They're going to settle all disputes amicably. I recall there was that dispute earlier this year over the Cha Time brand. So, folks, if you are about to celebrate the three-day weekend, you can go and have your Cha Time or Tea Life in peace.
Actually, the dispute has been going on for more than a year. I think last year was when they had the contract abruptly cancelled. There was about 24 years left on that contract, and Lube was the sole franchisee in Malaysia for the Cha Time brand. Of course, La Kafa is the, I guess, holder of that brand, and all 165 at that point in time was owned by them.
Yeah, so now with this latest news, both parties say that they've reached an out-of-court settlement, and this is arising from their one-time franchise relationship of the Cha Time bubble tea brand, and they've resolved the dispute, and they said that they've both agreed that all the other terms shall remain private and confidential.
Do you know that? So I interviewed Brian Liu from Lube Holdings, that's right, on the Breakfast Grill last year, just after the contract was terminated, when all this, public spat became very public in the media. And he, at that point in time, was still figuring out what to do next. And he announced the name of the new brand on BFM. And there was a lot of, speculation as to how you pronounce it. Is it Tea Live, Tea Alive, Tea Live, Tea Live? So he clarified on BFM.
All right. So again, that podcast is available on the BFM app as well. That was back in February of last year. Looks like it, at least judging by the search
result. Yes, that's right.
Result. Okay.
February last year.
You know, so moving forward then, so a couple of questions here, because previously, Lube Holdings had plans to do an IPO in about 2 years, right? So now that this dispute has been amicably resolved, so is that plan for an IPO, does that still stand? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and as of July 2018, I think there are about nearly 180 Tea Life outlets in Malaysia, and they have over 1,000 employees. So yeah, quite big. They have managed expenses from last year, just within a year.
Yeah, the bubble tea trend is not going to go away for sure.
Well, so that's the thing, right? So now La Kafa operates its own Cha Time stores via this other company. And then you've got Lube Holdings doing their Tea Live, Tea Alive thing. On top of that, you've got all these other players in that whole bubble tea space, or bubble tea bubble, right? And the competition is going to be intense as well, right? You know, obviously, that pie, that bubble is growing. So we have to wait and see how much more market share Tea Life can grab from the incumbent, so to speak, Cha Time. All right, fascinating stuff.
That's right. So, I mean, look, it was really quite interesting. 113 days now in power, Pakatan Harapan in federal government. I'd really like to kind of get Dato' Sri to, I guess, clarify some of the comments that she's made in the press that's gotten a lot of backlash, the child marriage issue being one question, the LGBTQ issue being another, but also there's many things about Anwar being the Prime Minister in waiting, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim being the Prime Minister in waiting, and how that kind of feeds in with her being in the Deputy Prime Minister seat. Could we be seeing a husband-wife team in the in Putrajaya a la House of Cards? We don't want that, right? So that's a question that I'll be posing to her.
Yeah, because that would raise then concerns over nepotism, you know, and also at the same time, Dato Sri Wan Aziza has been seen as that reluctant politician, right? She was seen as that, you know, that seat warmer, for lack of better terms. I apologize.
Well, she has actually come out to say that, you know, I think in an Al Jazeera interview, she did come up and use the word seat warmer herself. So, you know, you're not putting words in her mouth.
Thank you. Whew. Thanks for saving me there. So, plenty of insights to look forward to. Again, that's coming up on The Breakfast Grill. Dato Sri, Dr. Wan Aziza, Dr. Wan Ismail, after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. All right, back to the top business stories. A familiar theme here, 1MDB. So earlier on the program, we mentioned this exclusive in the NST, that's the New Straits Times, talking about this ex-spy chief here in Malaysia who has allegedly misappropriated government funds to the tune of some almost 50 million ringgit linked to 1MDB.
Yeah, and according to the NST, the money was brought into the country sometime in mid-April, just 1 week from before G14, allegedly to fund the poll. So giving the timing of that, right? And sources told the NST that the money was brought in all at once through KLIA.
Yeah, that sounds really dodgy to me. I'm not sure how that would work if you have to carry so much money, as we mentioned a bit earlier.
And the largest US denomination, I think, is a $100 bill. Right, that. So if you're looking at
12 million US dollars,
many suitcases would have to be brought in. So this is, I guess, you know, the story of the ex-spy just evolving. Perhaps this is an exclusive from NST. So we're really seeing perhaps more details come out in the next few days. Perhaps we might see this story develop further. But with 1MDB, I mean, there's also news coming out from the US that the DOJ, the US Justice Department, is now investigating whether Joe Lowe laundered tens of millions of dollars through two associates. Apparently, these funds were used to pay a U.S. legal team.
And part of that legal team is the former New Jersey governor, Chris Christie. Now, if you're not familiar with Chris Christie, he made a bid for the Republican nomination to become POTUS. Obviously, that didn't work out.
Wasn't there the toll controversy as well?
Chris Christie, you know, he has been on many late night programs, you know, poking fun at his weight. That's in pop culture. But, you know, he's still a heavyweight, no pun intended, and the Republican scene. So now he is being linked to Joe Lowe as being one of those two associates who might be helping his legal case over there in the US. And again, this is all according to that report in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, according to that Wall Street Journal, people familiar with the matter say that the DOJ is looking at whether Thai businessman Peng Piam Lagunert and former rap artist Pras Michelle, that's part of, I think, the Fugees, right?
He's the third Fuji. That solves the mystery. Who's the third Fuji? You know, Lauryn Hill, you know, Wyclef Jean. Who's the third Fuji? Now you know.
Yeah.
Well, apparently they're saying that they could have helped Jolo facilitate the payment via the international financial system. Because they're saying this Thai businessman handled payments to the tens of millions of dollars, guys, to Jolo's lead law firm and advisors, and basically help Jolo pay like for hotel expenses and all that.
Mm. Right. And speaking about Jolo, if you remember last week, we saw that, I guess, Malaysian authorities finally made a move against Jolo with the filing of criminal charges against him in absentia. Those charges were, of course, for money laundering, brought against Jolo and his father. However, what's important here is what this means, right? So the charges actually paved the way for the government to seek an extradition of these two men. So wherever they are, and the government seems to know where they are, they say they know where they can now ask for extradition. The problem is, if the country that Jolo is in doesn't have an extradition treaty with Malaysia, that could complicate matters.
Actually, The Edge broke the story, and in that story, The Edge mentioned that Jolo and his family members are believed to currently be in China or Abu Dhabi.
All right. So 1MDB, it's not going to go away anytime soon. We will keep you guys posted on that. Now, moving on to another a topic here. Let's talk about rice.
That's right.
So, according to the Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry Minister, Salahuddin Ayub, Malaysia aims to achieve 80% self-sufficiency in rice within 2 years. Now, that's a 10 percentage point increase from the current 70%.
Yeah, and it's a big deal because at the moment we don't have a self-sufficiency. I believe, in fact, we have a shortfall when it comes to rice. We currently produce about 2 million tons of rice annually, and this is well below the annual consumption estimate of about 3 million tons per year. It could be most Malaysians' favourite carb, unless you like quinoa.
Unless you can afford quinoa.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
I like white rice and I cannot lie. Moving on.
Brown is better. Anyway, so the question really is, can we increase our self-sufficiency rate within the next few years, right? If we take a look at where we are now in terms of rice stockpile, we're at 22 days, guys. Compare that to China. China, in the size of the country, has a stockpile of rice to last 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. I think Thailand has a stockpile of 6 months. Yeah, compared to our 22 days.
But their stockpile, well, we know that ill-fated scheme with Ying Lak Shin or what, but that's a whole different story. Hopefully, we won't go down that path in terms of trying to find food security here, right? But the idea here is, okay, if we're trying to ramp up the level of rice production here in Malaysia in the name of becoming more, achieving food security, mm-hmm. then it comes at an opportunity cost, right? Now, we understand that there's plenty of complexities in the current system with Bernas, to put it kindly. But then, ultimately also, like, the land that you would use for more rice production could be used for, say, other agricultural products or for other economic activities, right? Do we want to go down that path as opposed to being, say, a net consumer or net importer of rice and then being able to access cheaper rice abroad?
Yeah, if you look at, for us, 60% of rice consumed in this country is produced by local farmers, and the price of locally produced rice, that is fixed by the government. 30% of rice consumed here is imported, and imported rice cannot be sold at a price lower than the local variety.
Yeah, so there's a lot to do with the price structure, subsidies given, and the control of locally produced rice, how much that's going for at the market rate. Now, coming back to your point, Han, about whether the land should be used for rice, the idea is to increase the output of rice on the existing land using transfers of technology, like Thailand did, right? Thailand is great when it comes to high-end or high-tech agriculture. But Malaysia, in general, is a high-cost producer of rice. The cost of producing rice in Malaysia is extremely high. We have to learn to bring down that cost. And how we're going to do that is another question. Or should we instead be moving away from looking to reduce the shortfall through more rice output, and instead look to import rice by reducing the price of imported rice?
Yeah, and then perhaps the capital used towards increasing the output of rice be funneled towards moving us up the value chain, right, in a higher economic value output, right, as opposed to just rice.
So many stakeholders. We're forgetting the paddy farmers. We have to take them into consideration as well.
Who are already currently subsidized quite heavily, right? Correct?
That's right, yes.
All right. Okay, so it's coming up to the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, don't forget, we have the Breakfast Grill this morning, an exclusive with the Deputy Prime Minister, Dato Sri Dr. Wan Azizah, Dr. Wan Ismail. Stay tuned for that right here on BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with a Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.